Welcome to the Project Zion podcast. This podcast explores the unique spiritual and theological gifts Community of Christ offers for today's world.
Hello, and welcome to the Project Zion podcast. I'm your host, Carla Long, and today we're discussing what it means to be a prophetic people. Now, I'm not even sure how long ago this was, but a while ago, Community of Christ started saying that we are not necessarily just a people with a prophet. We are a prophetic people, and we work really hard to live that way. But what this podcast is about and what this series is about is that I'm curious about what that means to our people. So I'm interviewing a number of people about what that means to them, and today I'm interviewing Matt Frizzell. Hi, Matt.
Hey, hi, Carla. Good morning.
Matt, or wherever you are in the world, right?
Exactly.
Now, Matt is the Director of Human Resources in Community of Christ, and some have said that's the hardest job in the church.
Now,
yeah, it's pretty hard. It sounds really hard, huh, Matt?
Some days it is.
Yeah. So tell us more about yourself besides being the Director of Human Resources in Community of Christ.
Oh, I grew up Community of Christ. I grew up in an area that was it was primarily Christian Reformed, so I have that experience of kind of being a minority in another culture. Christian Reformed is also in the U.S. kind of a minority, but they are really concentrated in West Michigan where I live. So anyway, I share that because that really impacted kind of how I understood the world and approached the world. My mom's side of the family came from that Christian Reformed background. There's a lot of Dutch people in West Michigan, and so I'm like one half of that Dutch culture, Christian Reformed, and the other half is like, I don't know, seventh generation Community of Christ or something. And needless to say, both people thought they belonged to the right church. And so both my families, the sides of my families, never really got along on religious terms. And I think that's what made me a theologian. I started asking lots of questions like, why does grandma and grandpa think this way? And mom and dad and grandma and grandpa on the other side think this way. And I started trying to deal with complex theological issues since I was a kid. And so that became kind of a life's calling, and ended up going to school and seminary for a while. Anyway, it was really, really helpful for me because I couldn't find what I was looking for in the Community of Christ. I know some people have that experience, like, you know, their spiritual journey takes them somewhere and they don't want to leave their faith tradition, or maybe they do, but they don't have the resources in it to take that next step. And I really didn't. I needed to be in a classroom with other people, and the MAR wasn't really for me at the time. So anyway, I went to school and started that journey, and it opened me up to lots of different things, made me who I am today. And I'm really glad to be able to be serving the church after being at Graceland and being part of the seminary and teaching at Graceland and all that stuff. It's that's a little bit about me. Oh, and I like motorcycles, camping, and coffee.
Well, who doesn't?
Yeah, that's right. Except not at the same time. It's really hard to camp, ride a motorcycle, and drink coffee at the same time.
But if anyone can do it, Matt, you could.
Yeah, we'll see.
So, Matt, let's just jump into it. I want to hear what the word prophetic means to you, and what is your understanding of the word prophetic in Community of Christ?
Sure. Well, this is a great question because and it's very interesting to me. A lot of my influences and in thinking about what it means to be prophetic started in Community of Christ in the Restoration tradition, but broke out of that very quickly. Because in seminary, when I would talk to my Protestant and Catholic friends, prophetic had a different valence, different usage, different meaning. We always really focused on, you know, we have a prophet and we have ongoing revelation. And so being a prophetic people was, like you described, it was more about the fact that we see ourselves as prophetic because we, quote unquote, have a prophet. It's kind of like a property thing. You know, I have this. And I'm not sure that's really the best way. I was going to say it's not accurate too, because I'm not sure it is. And so I started you know, just having a prophet doesn't mean you're prophetic. And so I started digging a little bit. And as I jumped into this world, there's a whole bunch of things that made more sense. So for me, and being a prophetic people lends in that direction. Etymology is interesting. So I like it, you know, in terms of what do words mean and where do they come from? And so for the word prophetic, that really helped me when I was in school. The classic meaning of prophet comes from a word that literally means a person who speaks for God. And I understand that in two ways. One is to mean to like be pro God, you know, like I'm in favor of God. So you speak for God in the sense that, hey, if God is on this side of the issue, then let's take that side. You know, I to speak for God in the sense of bearing witness or being in favor of God's view on something. You can see that in the world. You know, do we want to try to this? And this quickly goes to what it means to be prophetic. You know, I want to be on God's side of things in the world. I want to believe and build the kingdom of God. So in that sense, you speak for God. But there's also the other sense of it in terms of speaking instead, speaking in God's stead. So God isn't here to speak, so I will speak for God. And that's, you know, that's kind of more of the classic mystical and traditional understanding of prophet. You know, the prophet literally spoke God's words or what God would say in this case. And so, and that's, you can see that there's hopefully that's obvious that there's a very different understanding. One is I kind of bear witness and proclaim, I'm on God's side of things. And the other one is more, no, I am the one here speaking for God. And that's kind of how we understood in the tradition, how the prophet speaks for the church. And so having both understandings of prophetic was really helpful because I didn't necessarily see myself as a prophet who walked around and spoke for God. But at the same time, I could be a prophetic person who spoke in God's stead, or excuse me, that's not exactly what I meant. It was opposite of what I meant. I speak for God. I'm on God's side of things. And so that's one of the ways it means to be a prophetic people. And I thought that was a really interesting, helpful approach because it helps clarify a problem that I see in that carries through from the ancient world. That's actually part of etymology too. The Greek word for prophet has more of the meanings that I just shared, but it comes from a Hebrew term the Hebrew term meaning soothsayer. And so that's where you get this other side of what it means to be prophetic in the historical understanding of it. And that is, you know, somebody who kind of fortune tells or predicts. Have you ever seen on the internet, you know, prophets who prophesy and say, this is going to happen or that this is going to happen next and God is going to do this. And that's more the soothsaying and fortune telling aspect of it. And for me, I need to separate those things because I think, I think that confusion of being a soothsayer and someone who speaks for God, you know, and who's on God's side of things comes from a lot of historical and interpretation issues we have with the Bible, meaning, you know, and it's a carryover from an ancient understanding. You got to remember that when people wrote, when people wrote scriptures and prophets existed in the ancient world, they didn't have the Weather Channel. They didn't have science and medicine. So when things happened, they didn't know why. They didn't have predictive tools and understandings of the world that helped them understand, well, A leads to B. And so a prophet would, you know, predict based on things. You would go see an oracle or a fortune teller or a prophet in ancient religions to see what the future would be. And that's more of an ancient understanding. I think when we decide to go to a prophet to see what the weather's going to be for tomorrow instead of the Weather Channel, or if we go to a prophet to see what's going to happen to our health instead of a doctor, you know, we fall into that confusion. And so I think being a prophetic people needs to be updated. I think we need to think about it as not in conflict, but in harmony with a way we understand the world works. And so to fast forward and to say, make it complicated, but also think very simple. I think fortune telling is an unhelpful way because there are better ways to think about what it means to be prophetic. And it's more about speaking or being on God's side of things in the world. That's what it means to be a prophetic people. And Jesus, for me, is a prime example of that, because in each of the Gospels, he declares the kingdom of God, and we're called into that kingdom with him. And so to be a prophetic people is to be about the work of the kingdom on earth. And I think that's exactly what Jesus called us to be, and that's what it means to me. That was kind of long, Carla. Are you still with me, or did you go get breakfast?
Oh, I'm back. Sorry. I missed all that. Could you say that again?
I realized as I got into it, I'm like, well, this is kind of complicated, but I hope it made sense. I think there's a challenge to separate prophesying from fortune telling. So I think we do need to separate those things, not completely, but to separate them out a little bit, but go back to the ancient meaning of it in terms of the prophet, you know, stood for the covenant, and the prophet understood the political and social world as a world in which when you break the covenant with God, bad things happen. And that's kind of how the prophet saw things working. When you stopped keeping the teachings, when the activities of the powerful and the wealthy were no longer in harmony and in mind with the welfare of the vulnerable, you know, that's when the prophet starts speaking out and saying, the covenant has been broken. We are not following what we've been told, and bad things are going to happen from that. There's going to be a judgment. And I think that ancient sense of what it means to be prophetic, it does involve some sort of fortune telling, but it's kind of the fortune telling you see today too, in the sense that when you make political decisions, you don't always know what's going to happen. And, you know, so people, you know, issue warnings, or they're in favor of it, or they like or dislike different things politically. But for the prophet, it was all based on that covenant. And so there's still that predictive element, that what's going to happen next element in the political and social world. And I think that's more of the part that we want to keep in terms of what it means to be a prophetic people, because we want to be on God's side of things. And so anyway, that's how I see what it means to be prophetic. Basically, all that comes down to really proclaiming the kingdom of God on earth as it is in heaven, and being and speaking for, acting on behalf of God in God's world.
Well, I actually think that's really helpful, Matt. You know, it does seem like there's a really healthy way to be a prophetic people, and there's also a really unhealthy way to follow a prophet. And there's probably just a myriad of ways in between that as well. Both can be unhealthy, both can be healthy. But in a tradition that I'm now familiar with, there are people who believe that their president prophet speaks directly to God, and that God, I could be wrong about this, but I think that, you know, God or Jesus comes into their room and like speaks directly to them. And for me, I see that as something that could be really unhealthy and manipulative. And I think that it could be a way to hurt people. So I see that as a very obviously unhealthy way to view being a prophet and so on and so forth. For me, being a prophetic people means that you have this community around you that is also working through these things with you, and that you do say the hard things. You say the things and stand up, speak truth to power. It's not okay to keep children in cages. It's not okay to persecute people for being who they are, so on and so forth. Saying the hard things because you know you have this community with you, rather than speaking down to people and saying, this is what God said, and you better believe me, because this is, you know, if you don't, good luck to you.
Yeah, you're bringing up an interesting problem, because it, in my mind, I separate kind of this mystical spiritual experience that the prophet can represent and exemplify in terms of this direct access to God, but also the product of that. In other words, so you spoke to God. So what? Well, it's about making the world a better place. It's about, and it's more, it's not that simple as if making the world a better place is simple anyway. But some people find that answer kind of anticlimactic. Well, making the world a better place is hard work. And so what is the point of being, of speaking to God and speaking before God and hearing God speak? And I, for me, if there are some basic rules of thumb, for me, my prophetic experiences and my understanding of scripture in particular always point towards the kingdom of God on earth. And it always means it in such a way that people are reconciled, people are healed, the valleys are made high and the mountains are made low. And this is where my understanding of the voices of suffering and the prophetic, the oppressed kind of come into play. Those prophetic voices often are the voices that come from, not from the high places of presidents or prophets in comfortable and beautiful places, but those prophetic voices often come from below. Those prophetic voices come from those on the underside of history. Those prophetic voices come from those who suffer unjustly and are ignored, erased, and oftentimes outright silenced. I say often, that's usually, that's the norm, not the exception. And so, I see that in Jesus. I don't see this as some liberal agenda. I mean, that's Jesus. Jesus was a peasant. Jesus was a nobody. Jesus probably couldn't read. Jesus, was homeless. He was an itinerant minister. It's kind of fun to call him homeless then, because he kind of was. And he hung out with people who were not wealthy or citizens of the empire. And he was a voice from below. I mean, people who die of crucifixion aren't people of status. They're slaves. They're rebels. They are no ones, and they are made examples of. And Jesus fits all of those categories. And so that's a really helpful way also for me to try to create a discernment lens, a process of understanding where those prophetic voices are. And they're usually from the underside and from those places that are silenced and kept quiet. And they're usually those voices who can see more clearly because they see what's wrong with what we say is good and perfect and right, because they're victims or they've experienced the hurt and the suffering and the injustice, the unnecessary suffering and the unnecessary injustice of the way we live and the way we operate. And so anyway, that's a tension. That's a tension in what in understanding the prophetic. And so again, for me, Jesus is that example that goes back, is an excellent touchstone. I mean, when I think about the great prophets, I love Steve Veazey. He's a great guy. I love Wallace B. Smith. I love Grant McMurray. These are people that I've known, but my models of the prophet is Jesus, and they're Isaiah and Ezekiel and Jeremiah. They're biblical, and they're not, it's not that these modern day prophets aren't as important. It just means that they have that status because of something that came earlier. In Joseph Smith too. I mean, he was a prophet, but he was a prophet based on a model that came earlier. And going back to understand that earlier model and that biblically centered understanding of what it means prophetic, I think is a really important and helpful way to keep touch on what being a prophet means. Because there needs to be some sort of continuity and some sort of reflection, some sort of informing of what a prophet means by going back to the tradition. Now, don't get me wrong. I want to be very clear and hopefully not too long-winded. There are moments when the prophet breaks from that tradition. Jesus would be a good example of it. Jesus read Torah in a completely different way than some others around him. And to even believe he was the Messiah was to break from the dominant traditions of the time. So it's not that prophets don't break traditions. Matter of fact, they are often the reinterpreters and the reinventors of tradition. But at the same time, I think going back and trying to understand how that works and seeing the tradition is a helpful way to put a gauge on the discernment process, so that when we see people today who call themselves prophets, we have a guide. We have a matrix, a map to go look at and to start our discernment process. I kind of took that down a rabbit hole, but I think it's an important one. So I hope that joined your comment in a healthy way.
Oh, I think so. I Yeah, I appreciate this conversation. I think this is an important conversation and an important distinction to make. So my next question for you is, what is a prophetic moment that you have experienced? What was happening? Where were you? And what makes a moment prophetic?
That's a good question. I've had lots of prophetic moments just in my spiritual journey where in the process of study, my mind was illuminated and I had those moments of clarity where my heart was set at peace and at ease. But I've also had those kind of deeply personal prophetic moments where the audience really wasn't the world. The audience wasn't greater society. It was for me. And I like to lift, I wouldn't say I like, I think it's important to lift up the tension of both. So what one is a testimony that to this day I can't, and I'm going to go over it briefly. It certainly deserves more time, but more time than really we should have on a podcast. I did have one of those undeniable moments at a camp when I was a teenager where someone did speak under the influence of the Spirit and they ended up calling me by name and talking to me. And Carla, every critical thinking cell in my brain has tried to think about that experience, not tear it apart, but understand it because it was so emotionally overwhelming. It was so life-changing. It had such a deep, overwhelming impact on me that it was possible to shut my brain off and to just not, and to just kind of accept it as a mystical experience and get taken away in that experience. So I wanted to make sure that I was thinking about it clearly, but every time I thought about it, I come back to kind of this undeniable testimony that this powerful encounter happened, and it was similar to the spirit that I felt in my evangelist blessing, where again the love of God came very personally and profoundly to me and spoke to me and gave me clarity on my life. So not perfect clarity, just the kind of, it's not as if I got a roadmap or a real sense of what exactly my life was going to be about, but the strong prophetic sense of God's assurance and love for me and direction in my life and constant companionship. So I want to honor that. I have had those experiences. And I absolutely believe they happen. That I've also had experiences that are more related to the kind of prophetic movement of the Spirit in the world and of moving those who are open and interested into the kingdom. I'll never forget, one of my favorite classes to teach at Graceland was The Life and Writings of Dr. Martin Luther King. And I wish I'd had time to read more of it. There's a story that he tells that is kind of a turning point in his life. And it's early on in 1956. And at this point, we really don't even know who Martin Luther King really is yet. So if you were alive at that time, 1956 is early on in his life and ministry. And he kind of gets hustled into being the leader of the Montgomery Improvement Association. And he agrees to do this. And they organize the bus boycott, which kind of gets everything going. And the bus boycott is highly effective. And in the middle of the night with his family, he gets this phone call. And this phone call is one of the many threatening phone calls that Martin Luther King would get in his life. And a person on the other end basically said, you know, you're an outsider here. We're done with your improvement stuff. And, you know, if you keep this boycott up and if you keep pushing these issues and organizing and doing your work, we're not only going to kill you, we're going to blow up your house and everyone in it. And Martin Luther King tells the story of getting that phone call deep in the night. He's in the kitchen and he shuts, or he puts the ringer down, the receiver down, and just sits and sits in the fear of that phone call. And again, this is early on in his career. And so he's thinking about his family and he's thinking about his work and the fears, as he tells it, the fears creep in. And he begins to starting to think about how he can get out of Montgomery in a legitimate way. So it looks like he did it for the right reasons. And I think every one of us can identify with this moment where we start strategizing how to get out of something and saving face, where maybe it's a lie or maybe it's a bad situation or decision we made, and your brain starts going in a different direction. It's almost as if the fear has the power to turn your spirit around and change the way it's directing. And he tells the story that it was in that moment that he began to pray. And his testimony is that as he was praying, he could literally hear the words of someone calling his name, said, "Martin Luther, stand up for truth and for justice and for righteousness." And so he had that prophetic moment for him personally. And of course, we know what happened in his life. And he shares that at that moment, a sense of confirmation and resolve and peace entered him in a way that just vanquished all those fears. And I don't think it made him Superman, but it made him strong in his vulnerability. And he was able to move on. When I hear about stories like that, I see the prophetic in the two ways that I'm talking about come together, where you get not only that spiritual encounter with this powerful spirit of God, but I mean, who is Dr. Martin Luther King? Who does he end up being? He ends up being one of the most important figures of the 20th century. And why? Because he engages in a nonviolent campaign to change the world, to end racism as he understood it, which his dream has not come a reality yet. Racism is not over. We still live in the shadow or in the dream of his dream. But he ends up giving his life to that in that moment. I think that is a great story about how the prophetic works. I've heard it in stories of people who have struggled with who they are. Oftentimes in the stories of those who are in the sexual minority, and they have a moment where they just, a prophetic moment, they realize they embrace themselves regardless and live a new life as the true life of who they are. When I hear those stories, I hear stories that are prophetic stories about being a reconciled whole person committed to the welfare of others and to a better world. And so those are prophetic moments that I've experienced. And of course, they carry on as I teach this class, and I've watched as I've studied more about the civil rights movement, every time I've seen vulnerable people take a stand against powerful forces. I mean, there is that prophetic spirit that just overwhelms me personally, because it exposes the truth of our world. It is what we make it. And our lives are what we make it. And if we decide to live in the grand, beautiful dream of the kingdom that we see in Jesus and is born out in the prophets and that is testified in the many voices throughout history about, it's possible to live sustainably in harmony. It's possible to give our lives to justice and peace. It's possible to love our neighbor and ourselves. And when we do that, God is a part of all of it. Then we can be a part of the kingdom of God on earth as it is in heaven. And those are prophetic moments for me. It's kind of as if there's a signature in those deeply personal moments where you experience reconciliation and wholeness and peace and oneness with the good divine spirit of God, and you feel Christ's presence and then see that in others and see it multiply outside of yourself. Those are prophetic moments.
That is powerful. That is powerful. And I think that I just want to bring up something that you said again. You know, like, it's a choice that we have to make to be a prophetic people. the fear could easily stop us. It's like, I don't want to be the weird one. I don't want to be the one saying this and doing this. I don't want to put my neck out there and have someone call me dumb or stupid or whatever. We have to make a choice to do it. And I just like Martin Luther King did, as you were discussing, as you told. So gosh, that was really powerful. Thank you, Matt, for sharing that.
Yeah, well, there, I want to join one quick piece of what you, to draw a loop back to something. And I'll try, hopefully I'll say it quickly because I'm not very good at that. And I think that's funny and sad at the same time. The point, there's a connection between what you just said and the mistake that many churches make, but the RLDS tradition made. And that is, we forget being a prophetic people is a choice. And we say, well, we have a prophet, so we therefore must be prophetic. And this, it, what I guess what is so obvious to me, it's, I've gotten to the point now where it's kind of a face palm moment or shake my head moment where I'm reading the Bible and I'm seeing these interactions where Pharisees and others are saying to Jesus, well, we're sons and daughters of Abraham. Of course God is on our side. And Jesus is going, that doesn't mean squat. Jesus, you know, God could raise children of Abraham out of the ground. What matters is something else. And we made that same mistake 2,000 years later, thinking that being a prophetic people, it's like, well, we have a prophet. That makes us prophetic. All you have to do is have one. Why don't you get one? You know, and when you think about it, you realize how silly it really does sound, that just because you have a prophet or you've ordained one doesn't mean you're prophetic. And the same thing was true in the ancient tradition. Just because you are a son and daughter of Abraham and you live in the covenant, that doesn't mean you're keeping it. That doesn't mean that you are somehow chosen and nobody else is. And of course, this goes to the heart of the gospel. Jesus starts choosing other people then. You know, we'll work with Samaritans. We'll work with sinners. We'll work with prostitutes. We'll work with tax collectors. You know, Jesus is proclaiming the kingdom and planting its seeds wherever there is fertile ground to do so. It is not about being selected and being elect and having something that nobody else has. And we made that mistake. 2,000 years later, we think that just having a prophet makes us prophetic. No, it's a choice. And that resonates so clearly. And so your point is so well taken. It is a choice. And I think that's why it's so important to fall in love with the tradition and begin to identify those prophets around us and to see how the prophet is always connected to a living God acting on earth now for the sake of the kingdom on earth as it is in heaven, not only in our lives, but for the planet. That has to be a choice because it's not inherent.
I 100% agree. So I think that's pretty, this is powerful stuff, Matt. Thanks for bringing it up. So my last question is.
I'm preaching. Sorry.
Amen, brother. Amen.
I didn't mean to preach.
I think it's important. I hear the prophetic in your words. So my last question is, it's a little bit of a long question, but you're going to take some parts of it and explain it, I hope. So there's been a lot of Community Christ, the Community Christ umbrella is pretty large, right? And so I'm going to give you a list of some different things that have happened in Community of Christ. And I want you to pick one or two of them and talk about, for you, what was the prophetic in those times. So the list is this. And you have the list in front of you. I'm saying it only for our listeners. So listeners, this is the list that we have given the people we're interviewing to help us figure out the prophetic in them. So the concept of Zion, ordination of women, the LGBTQIA plus movement, diversity in leadership, attention to the poor, the international diversity and going across borders for ministry, nonviolence, the process of common consent, and signal communities. So that's a pretty solid list. That's a big old list. So Matt, could you just pick one or two of them maybe and talk about how you saw the prophetic in those things?
Well, yeah. And I actually want to pick three, but I'm going to go through them quickly and just see if you think there's anything worth discussing more in them, because each one of those, with my study background, and I say this just because it doesn't mean that I'm like better or cool. It just means this is the way I see those things and have studied them. Every one of those deserve a book, a discussion, but we can't do that. I put the ordination and the ordination of women and the embrace, the movement of the liberation movement, the humanization movement of the LGBTQIA plus community together, primarily because both of them are united force against the injustice in the structures of patriarchy. That it's a long story. I won't get into it, but there's an intimate relationship between feminism, women's liberation, but also the full inclusion and understanding of gender fluidity and the sexual minority. And I use that term because it was one that was given to me in seminary by others who identified in the sexual minority. And I think it was a helpful umbrella term. And if it's offensive to anybody, I apologize that. I will say though, I wonder if it really is a minority when you really take time to think about how forced heteronormativity is on all of us. And if we took a deep look inside of us, maybe none of us really fit the gender stereotypes very well, because we're all a little deviant in our own way, in the sense that we don't fulfill the ideal. But the movement to accept and transform our structures of authority has everything to do with the prophetic movement of God being a non-respecter of persons. And so I think that is a prophetic movement. When we decided historically that men are the only ones with authority, I totally see the Spirit's movement in upsetting that and then extending it far beyond men and women, but to how we understand just gender fluidity and how that comes together with same-sex loving persons and those who are in the LGBTIQA plus umbrella. That is just a real powerful reminder that God is everywhere and works with all. Attention to the poor, that has to do with what's prophetic in that is upsetting our worship of wealth and its classism that so structures the American reality. Class is so funny in America. It's the one thing we will not talk about, and it goes to the heart of American culture. And it goes to the heart of American economics, and it goes to the heart of the very identity of it, what it means to be American. And it is a US thing, because I don't mean to be exclusivistic. Hopefully my international sisters and brothers will resonate with this. The US exports its way of life everywhere. So just because it's US centric does not mean it's not global. This is part of the neoliberal project to kind of westernize the world. And in that world, the poor, the orphan, the widow, the undesirable, the unmarketable, the unpretty, the whatever you want to name it, whatever fits outside of the desired category is marginalized, is poor, is diminished, is denied access, is not given the same privilege and opportunities as those who fit in whatever the desirable category is. This is the nature of how market culture and life works. It's all about desire and want and being driven by that. And the poor and the oppressed and the marginalized, the fatherless, the stranger, those are the categories of the excluded. And that's also where God lives and works. That soul, Ivan and Jesus have already talked about that. So the prophetic in that is upsetting our order of importance of things and seeing the world and seeing others from a God point of view, to speak for God in the way God sees people, not the way our market sees people or our policies see people or our culture sees people and categorizes people. And that again is absolutely prophetic, because only God can do that. Only God can blow our mind that way by transforming and upsetting and turning upside down what we think matters and seeing what matters to God. And then nonviolence is a part of that too, because all of these have to do with power. There is prophetic movement in nonviolent movements, nonviolence is a really poorly understood term, and I can't clarify it here, but nonviolence does not mean pacifist in the sense that there is non-resistance to evil or passivity around injustice. And I'm afraid that's what has kind of taken over our understanding. It's, we've begun to think about violence in black and white, where nonviolence is doing nothing and violence is being justified. And it's actually much, much more nuanced than that. What I think is powerful about nonviolence is that nonviolence actually agitates change. If you look at Dr. Martin Luther King and the philosophies of nonviolent direct action that have existed in the 20th century and before, nonviolence is a very specific tactic to actually agitate and change and instigate struggle for the sake of making change. And so some people, like many people, have accused Dr. Martin Luther King of violence when actually he was just agitating the authorities to expose the violence that was already in the system. And so that was one of the reasons why King and the King movement strategized to go to places where they knew nonviolent direct action would expose the violence of the authorities on unarmed protesting and constitutionally exercising their right, African Americans and other allies in that change movement. So nonviolence is not necessarily without struggle and without its own violence, but it does not use violence and force as a change agent. It exposes it. So nonviolence is very, very prophetic in and of itself because it confuses all those categories of legitimized violence or doing nothing. And I think that's really, really important. And so nonviolence is a way to at least the one of the ways I understand it is I see the prophetic in it, in that nonviolence upholds the humanity of the oppressed, but it also of the oppressor. And that's something King talked about a lot. And in many ways, nonviolence upholds the human rights of the divided classes that are being that are structuring the struggle. And of course, in King's case, it was the white dominant culture and African Americans, and that we could change it, you know, that and go from historical setting to historical setting. So nonviolence has the work of God in it because it holds the reconciled status of the oppressed and the oppressor in a unity, as King talked about, where he would uphold the humanity of the oppressors by not causing violence against them. And so I think that is absolutely prophetic and profound in profound ways. So hopefully that says what I mean. I did end up being longer than I thought, but I think I see the prophetic working in all of those because they upset our sense of power and move us towards a different understanding of power that I think God exposes and reveals to us in Jesus. One of the huge mistakes we make is I see people on all sides of the spectrum, politically and socially, still think of power in the way humans think of power, in the way that we imagine it on movies. And that's the power to control, the power to manipulate. I mean, that's what makes superheroes superheroes, right? They can do things. They can make things happen and cause change in ways that we can't. And that's what makes them super. And God upsets that sense of power, absolutely. And to see and to bear witness to that power in God that does not work through manipulation, it does not work through force, and it does not work through coercion, and control over others or over reality is very, very different concept of power that many of us in the West understand. And I see God's work in that. I also see it at work on the cross. And so that's a mystery to me that I think God is still revealing to us and has the prophetic written all over it.
You know, I keep thinking, of course, that's how we see power, because that is the comfortable way to see power. All those things you talked about, the LGBTQIA plus community, attention to the poor, and nonviolence, they all have like this kind of like uncomfortable underbelly, right? You know, like, well, yes, we want those people to be happy and healthy, but I don't want to have to do anything for that. Like, I'm happy where I am. I'm comfortable in my life, and I don't want to have to look at anything that's uncomfortable. But what being prophetic does, it forces you to look, and it forces you to not be in that comfortable place anymore. And it forces you to see that other people need help, or maybe you need help, or that there's some aspects of your life that you need to just take a stronger look at. So of course we see power in that way because it's so comfortable and we're used to it, and we understand how to act in that capacity. We have a more difficult time finding out how to act and how to be in a place where that power gets turned on its head. So, you know, sometimes I just want to live my life and I don't want to have to think about it. But this is calling us to actually think and act in ways that we might not know. We can't see a future ahead of us.
Yeah. And in closing, I think that's, I say in closing, cause it's just a helpful place, I think, to kind of rest. What you're describing, I think, is part of what any person who is interested in the prophetic needs to come to terms with. And I want to be very clear, to try to understand the prophetic does not mean that you have to cast your life or send yourself into endless experiences of discomfort and misery and struggle. Though, if you're unwilling to deal with yourself, if you're unwilling to deal with your own cultural training and makeup and identity, and I'm saying this obviously, or maybe it's not obvious because people can't see me, but as a white middle class professional, overeducated male, if anybody who's in any one of those privileged categories, because we're really all complex intersections of much more than that, if you're not willing to deal with what's uncomfortable, if you're not willing to deal with what's counterintuitive, if you're not willing to look at yourself, if you're not willing to see the difficulties, the sinful brokenness of who you are and the world you came from, it's really hard to be prophetic. I think that's because God has a way of resetting every agenda when you start seeing the world through God's eyes. God has a way of upsetting every category of importance, every value. The famous theologian, I still love reading Reinhold Niebuhr, 20th century, very influential. He wrote an article that was, it's not too weird. He just talked about the transvaluation of values, which what he meant was is that God theology in encountering God has a way of taking our priority lists and turning them upside down. So the child becomes more important. The oppressed becomes more important. And if you're important and you're privileged, then maybe you should continually find yourself in situations. Maybe God, it's a good rule of thumb to say, if I don't have privilege here, if this makes me uncomfortable, if I have to question who I am and what I'm doing, maybe I need to get closer to the way God sees me and how powerful I need God in my life. This may be the direction absolutely I need to go, which is right, completely counterintuitive, because we want to go towards the comfort, the easy, the privilege, the exciting, we want to move in that direction. But the prophetic spirit moves us deeper into intimacy with God, deeper into the peace of Jesus Christ, deeper into our dependency and our absolute need for God's present living spirit in us, with us, experienced now. And the more you enter into those fragile situations and those injustices of life, you need to trust God. And I think that's where the prophetic leads us. At least it leads me that way. And I am a baby in this. I'm just trying to get my head around it. I'm like in remedial, trying to get into prophetic 101, right? I'm trying to get into that world where I have to depend on God in the way Jesus did. And so it has everything to do with everything you're talking about, changing your understanding of power, changing your understanding of comfortability, changing your understanding of even what's good to some degree and desirable, because that is where the prophetic lives, breathes, and is many times the most powerful. That's my testimony.
I appreciate it. Thank you, Matt, for agreeing to be on this podcast and agreeing to talk about this. You know, you asked me earlier, why you, and why should I ask you these questions? I think that you, Carrie, bring in such an interesting perspective, and you've made references to how much you talk several times on this podcast, and I love listening to you. Maybe I'm the only one in the whole wide world, but I always learn something when I listen to you.
Yeah, my kids don't. My kids are not into that. They're they're like, another lecture from dad.
Well, they're teenagers. That's their job, actually. Well, thank you again for being on the podcast. Thank you for sharing your wisdom and your knowledge with us, and I believe for being prophetic.
Well, thanks. I appreciate listening to my passion. If nothing else, that's something that's very healing to me. I find God in that.
Thanks again, Matt.
Thanks for listening to Project Zion Podcast. Subscribe to our podcast on Apple Podcast, Stitcher, or whatever podcast streaming service you use. And while you are there, give us a 5-star rating. Project Zion Podcast is sponsored by Latter-day Seeker Ministries of Community of Christ. The views and opinions expressed in this episode are of those speaking and do not necessarily reflect the official policy or position of Latter-day Seeker Ministries or Community of Christ. The music has been graciously provided by Dave Hines.
I want you to start putting in that Law and Order dunk dunk right after every time I say something. I think that would really add to the whole ambiance.
Editors, I'm hoping that you're listening now. And if you are, please put in the dun dun.